Hare Krishna. So today morning, discussing from the 8th canto, the pastime of how Goddess Lakshmi has appeared from the milk ocean and everybody is giving her offerings. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that Lakshmi Devi is so glorious that even those people who are considered glorious in this world, even up to the point of Brahma, even they are making offerings to her. She can give benedictions even to them. So, generally in this world, there is a principle of reciprocation, which can be out of love or which can be out of business. So, reciprocation is a fact of life. So, sometimes we may go to a shop and we may pay something and we get something by that. So, that is reciprocation for transaction. It's okay, I give this, you take this. But in spiritual life or especially in relationships where you want to develop, again there is give and take. In every relationship there is some expectation and there is some contribution. But the reciprocation in relationships is not meant to be just for transaction. It is meant to be for connection. That by the reciprocation, the two people should come closer to each other. The two people should understand each other. Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Instruction that the Krishna consciousness movement is nourished by the sixfold loving exchanges. So it's interesting. He doesn't say it's nourished by distributing books, nourished by chanting Hare Krishna, which is true, all is important. But it's nourished by the sixfold loving exchanges. So reciprocation, which involves giving gifts, taking gifts, giving, offering prasad, honoring prasadam, and sharing one's heart, and hearing one's heart, hearing someone share their heart. So these are the ways by which, Prabhupada says, the Krishna consciousness movement will be nourished. So this is reciprocation for the sake of connection, for coming closer to each other. And when this is the understanding with which reciprocation is done with the Lord, that is when we move from mixed devotion to pure devotion. So when reciprocation is for the purpose of transaction. Yesterday I talked about Lakshmi Devi. She will be worshipped because she can give us a lot of benedictions. That is reciprocation for transaction, which is not considered very elevated. But reciprocation for connection, to become more devoted, to become more united in love. That is the essence of devotion. And here, it is described further that Lakshmi Devi, she appeared from the milk ocean, but then soon she will actually take her, she takes her position by the Lord. So that means she chooses the Lord as her consort. Actually, in this world, when the Lord appears or his associates appear, sometimes they may appear separately. But soon they become united. So Radharani, when she appeared, it almost appeared as if Radhashtami is coming up now after Janmashtami. It appeared as if she was almost like a some kind of deficient child. She wouldn't cry, she wouldn't speak, she wouldn't even open her eyes. But when Krishna came in front of her, for the first time she opened, she wanted to behold Krishna. So the Lord and his consorts unite often in dramatic ways when they appear in this world. So the appearance is not the beginning of their relationship. The appearance is simply the connection manifesting at our observed level. The relationship is eternal. And so that's why when we hear the Bhagavatam is not just history. It is eternity manifesting through history. It is eternity manifesting through history. It is not that Krishna came 5,000 years ago and from that time onwards people started worshipping Krishna. Krishna is eternally there in the spiritual world and Krishna is eternally worshipable. But he manifested 5,000 years ago over here. So, this theme that our reciprocation is for connection, that is vital when we also want to persevere in our practice of spiritual life. Yesterday I talked about the theme of when spiritual life gives us poison instead of nectar. And I said that may happen because we have to follow the rules and regulations of giving up worldly pleasures and of persevering in spiritual practice, even when these seem difficult. And then lastly, sometimes it may appear as though the Lord is causing us suffering, or our devotion to the Lord is causing our suffering, as happened with Prahlad or Bali Maharaj or the gopis. So today I'll continue with this theme. And when we reciprocate with the Lord, and somehow we are doing something for the Lord, we are doing some bhakti, and then if we don't get what we expect, then what do? Normally, in the world, when we form a relationship, and in that relationship, we don't get what we expect, then we often have a functional attitude toward that relationship. If I am in a particular job, and I find that this job is not paying me the way I want, this job is not giving me the kind of profile that I want, so then I think, why should I work over here? We'll change. So similarly, when people approach God, at that time, if their practice of bhakti does not give them what they want, they feel, why should I practice bhakti? Let me just give up. But we have two options actually. Either we just change our devotion, in the sense we give up our devotion, or we change our expectation. Change our expectation of what it is that is I can expect from this. So I will talk about how Krishna reciprocates with us and how we can see his reciprocation even when we are going through the poison phase in our spiritual life. When life seems to be difficult, when our spiritual life seems to be causing our distress. So at that time, how do we move forward? So I'll use an acronym, PURE, P-U-R-E, and I'll talk 4 points. P is patience. Patience is vital for any steady relationship. We live in a fast-paced world. We want everything instantly. So we want the results of our bhakti also instantly, whether it is material results or whether it is spiritual results. In America, I get to meet many senior Prabhupada disciples. Of course, Australia also we have. So many devotees told me that when Prabhupada was there, we felt as if in a few days, we are going to take over the world. And in a few months, we are all going to become pure devotees and go back to God. So that Prabhupada had that zeal which created such an intense devotional energy among people. And it is wonderful how hard and how extraordinarily devotees worked over there. But over a period of time, they also understood that things don't happen so fast. One devotee, Haigri Prabhu, came to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, I have been following the principles strictly for the last 6 months. But still, I have not seen Krishna. When will I see Krishna? So then Prabhupada just Prabhupada was translating the Bhagavad Gita. So he just turned and gave it to read this. He's taken aback. And he read that. That was the 11th chapter. And manyase yadi tachakyam maya drashtumiti prabho yogeshwar tato metvam darshayatmanam avyayam. This is 11.4. Prabhupada asked him to read this verse. It was that, my dear Lord, if you think it is possible, manyase yadi tachakyam maya drashtumiti prabho, please let me behold yogeshwar tato metvam. You who are the master of all mystic powers, darshayatmanam avyayam, please let me behold your beautiful form, your opulent form. So he read it. Prabhupada says, what does it mean? He says, what has it got to do with it? He read it again. And he read it again. And said, okay. So he said, manyase. So it is, if you think it is possible. Yes. Prabhupada said that our spiritual life and our spiritual advancement is determined by Krishna. It is not determined by us. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur would put it this way, that you cannot gate crash into the kingdom of God. I cannot say, I have practiced so much sadhana, I have to get to the spiritual world. So patience sometimes is essential for us to understand that actually we are not the ultimate doers. So that patience also shows us the commitment in a relationship. Patience shows us that we are in there for the long haul. If we look for immediate results, and we will get, it's not that we won't get immediate results also. When we chant Hare Krishna, when we practice bhakti, it does help us to feel calmer, it does purify us. But what happens in the process of bhakti is that initially when we come, there is sometimes dramatic purification. Because we may be having some gross habits and we just give it up. Smoking or whatever else might be there. Just chanting and practicing bhakti is a higher taste by which you give it up. And that creates a set of expectations. And all my other bad habits will also go away similarly fast. But the gross can be given up much more easily. The subtler attachments, they take longer time to give up. So patience may seem very difficult. And in our spiritual life, when we feel, oh, am I moving forward at all? Am I stagnating where I am? So at that time, it's important that we have the right vision. If we start becoming very proud or impatient, if we start becoming very proud, thinking that, you know, I am so advanced, then we need to look ahead and see the ecstasy of the great devotee, like the Goswami, the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then we understand, I have a long way to go. So when we look ahead, that will bring humility. But on the other hand, if you start feeling discouraged, am I practicing? What difference is it making? The same old issues every day I'm facing, my mind and senses, the world, people, everything. So what do I do? So at that time, we have to look back. Look back and see how far we have come. Looking back and seeing how far Krishna has brought us, that will help us have faith and hope. Yes, this process does work. Although it may not have worked the way I expected to, but it does work. Sometimes, if we are driving across, say, maybe Australia is a big continent, America is also a big continent, you're driving across the plains, no, it's just endless plain around you. And unless we look at some road marks, we feel, am I moving forward at all? Or if you're in the ocean and we are boating, then we just keep rowing, and we still, everywhere is just water only. No matter how far I can see, I still see water. Am I moving at all? But with every single oar that we are rowing, we are moving forwards. So this patience comes when we understand that we are on a long journey, but on this long journey, we have also come a long way. So when the poison phase seems to be there, I don't know that even it is a phase. It is not permanent. Nothing in this world is permanent. Even if there are problems, if spiritual life is giving poison, it is temporary. Even the devtas, when they started churning the milk ocean, they expected nectar and they got poison. Now they could have become disheartened and said, oh, this poison is unbearable. We can't deal with it. And they could have given up. But they persevered. There's patience. Now, patience doesn't necessarily mean just sitting back and doing nothing and waiting for things to happen. Patience means patiently persevering. In general, it is said that if there is action without patience, it is the mode of passion. If there is patience without action, that is the mode of ignorance. If I'm only patient and I don't do anything at all, then I'm not going to grow spiritually. So patience with action is the mode of goodness. So we have to be patient, but we also have to keep doing our part. Keep doing our part and keep moving forwards. So we keep doing what we can. And in due course, we will find the taste, the nectar will come. One of my main services is writing. So in writing, sometimes authors feel inspired to write. Sometimes authors get a writing block, writer's block. Just don't feel like writing anything. No ideas are coming, nothing is moving forward. So it said that if the writer keeps waiting for inspiration, then the writer is not a writer, the writer becomes a waiter. Just keep waiting for the rest of eternity. A Nobel laureate author was asked, do you write when you are inspired or do you write every day? He said, I write only when I'm inspired. And I make sure that inspiration arrives every morning at 9 o'clock. What that means is, we can't be dependent on that feeling, oh, I feel good, so I'll do it.
No, I will commit myself to do it. So patience means patience with action.
And then we see Prahlad Maharaj, he also had to suffer. He was internally absorbed in Krishna, in the Lord Vishnu, so he didn't suffer. But he had to go to that torrid phase when there was no knowledge whether he would be rescued or not. No knowledge whether somebody would actually help him in the situation that he was going through. But he was patient. And then eventually, Narasimha Dev appeared and delivered him. So patience, the fruits of patience, especially in spiritual life, are supremely sweet. And they make it worth the wait, worth the effort that we have to put in. The second part is understanding. P-U-R-E-M discussing. Understanding means that sometimes we need to understand how bhakti works. We need to understand how Krishna reciprocates. Sometimes Krishna, we have a particular expectation. Okay, this problem should be solved in this way. This is the problem. If Krishna solves this problem, Krishna is good. If Krishna doesn't solve this problem, does he even exist? But sometimes Krishna may have some other plan for us. So that other plan means what? That there is an external situation that needs to be dealt with, and there is an internal strength that needs to be developed. So Krishna can sometimes remove the external situation in one moment. But sometimes that external situation may be there in our life so that we develop the internal strength. So once a man was going through a forest, he was on a spiritual exploration, and suddenly he heard a voice. He was passing by a hill. He heard a voice. Okay, push this boulder up the hill. He looked around. There's a big boulder nearby. Push this boulder. He said, what? Who is this? This is God speaking. Push this boulder up the hill. So he started pushing. He said, God is telling me, maybe I should do it. And pushing. And it was huge. He pushed and pushed and he just couldn't move it. And 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 1 hour, he said, God has told me I must do it. So one day, 2 days, for 1 week he was pushing. Finally, 1 month he was pushing. He said, maybe this was how I wanted to search for God. So finally, 1 month later, he got exasperated. He says, God, you knew I wouldn't be able to push this up. Why did you ask me to, you knew I wouldn't be able to push this up the hill. Why did you ask me to do something which I couldn't do? He said, I told you to push it. Who told you to move it? He said, what is the point of pushing if you don't move? He says, what is the point? He said, look at your muscles. He had been a skinny fellow, but that workout of pushing every day for 1 month had strengthened him. So, sometimes, when we go through difficulties and spiritual life seems like poison, the difficult situation is out there. And the difficult situation, we may pray to Krishna, please remove this difficult situation. And yes, sometimes some difficult situations are unbearable. But if it can't be removed, then what we need to see is, Krishna may have some internal purpose. Krishna may want to strengthen us internally. So, sometimes that situation is meant to help us grow in our own inner strength. That may be, sometimes there may be some difficult people in our life. It said that some people bring happiness wherever they go. And some people bring happiness whenever they go. So, now it happens in such a way that sometimes the same person may be bringing happiness wherever they go. That's how one set of people feel. And the other set of people feel that about the same person. Whenever this person goes, I feel relieved. So, I was talking with one devotee. And I was talking about a senior devotee who is very well known and well respected. So, this devotee said, he's a wonderful devotee to admire from a distance. So, there is the way of damning by faint praise, it is said. You praise someone. You know, how was the prasad? It was edible. What? So that is an insult actually. To say that prasad is edible. Obviously, prasad should be much more than it should be delicious. It was wonderful. So sometimes we praise in such a way that actually the praise is a criticism. That is called damning by faint praise.
So similarly, to say that he's a wonderful person to admire from a distance, that means he's not a person, what we're saying is, he's not a good person to work with. Sometimes now what happens, there are some people in the lives of each one of us who may be difficult to work with. And when this is there, how do we see it? We have to see that I am not relating with this person alone. I am relating with Krishna. So we may feel that Krishna, you know, if only this situation is changed, then I can practice bhakti so much more peacefully. Yes, it may be true that we may practice bhakti much more peacefully. But whether that bhakti will lead to as much advancement, that is something which is open to question. Because ultimately, Krishna is in our hearts, Krishna is in the other person's heart. And Krishna knows, if we are facing difficulties, Krishna knows that. Krishna knows that we all, as natural human beings, even if we are devotees, we have some natural expectations from each other. And if somebody is not fulfilling those expectations, then we feel disappointed. So that is understandable. But Krishna observes, if despite this, if we keep persevering. So there is an understanding that Krishna may reward us differently. In the Bhagavatam, there is the 10th canto, there is a description that when Narad Muni came to meet Krishna in Dwarka, he gave a Parijat flower. And then Krishna gave that Parijat flower to his chief queen, that is Rukmini. Now Satyabhama got annoyed by that. Gopal, in the Gopal Champu, Jiva Goswami explains that actually Satyabhama manifests the mood of Radharani. Radharani is expected as expanded not as Rukmini but as Satyabhama. And Rukmini is the expansion of Chandravali. And the difference between Chandravali and Radharani is that Chandravali chases after Krishna, whereas Krishna chases after Radharani. So Chandravali is always there to serve Krishna and please Krishna. But Radharani, she gets angry with Krishna. And there is a place in Vrindavan, in Barsana, called Man Mandir, where Radharani gets upset with Krishna, and then Krishna bows his head down to Radharani in the lotus feet. Please forgive me. The Chandravali can never do this. She's always out to please Krishna. So Rukmini is in the mood of Chandravali. She's always trying to please Krishna. But of course, Radharani or Satyabhama are also pleasing Krishna. But they're pleasing Krishna in a different flavor. So when Satyabhama, she gets upset, he says, no, you gave her a Parijat flower, you did not give me anything. And he says, what to speak of Parijat flower? I'll get a tree for you. And he goes to the heavens and he takes her and he gets a full tree. Now, when he gets a full tree, Krishna knows that Rukmini will feel bad. And now, I'll have to do something to satisfy Rukmini. But Rukmini does not speak one word to him. Rukmini stays silent. And then when Rukmini stays silent, eventually, when Krishna and Rukmini have that, there's a chapter in the 10th canto, talks between Krishna and Rukmini. At that time, Krishna tries to make Rukmini angry. And she just doesn't become angry, actually she gets overwhelmed, she gets shocked. And finally Krishna doesn't say, no need to get scared like this, actually I just wanted to provoke you, I want to see you angry. So then she actually gets angry. And then while consoling her, he says, oh Rukmini, you have won my heart. Although you had every right to expect something from me, when I gave Satyabhama a whole Parijat tree, you did not ask me for anything. By your patience, you won my heart. So, by being perseverant in her service attitude, even when it was difficult, she won Krishna's heart. So, when sometimes we are in a situation where we are finding it difficult to serve because of some situation, some person, some interaction, then we have to understand. We may pray to Krishna, please remove this so that I can practice bhakti. But sometimes Krishna may have put that situation in our life so that we can grow internally. So that we can grow in terms of our inner strength. Now this does not mean that if there is violence or abuse, that we have to put up passively. We have to take necessary action. But we don't have to be reactive to every small problem that comes up.
that we just have to be see that my interaction with this person should not be based only on how this person is acting. It is also based on what will please Krishna in this situation. So when we have that understanding that I'm not just serving this person, I'm serving Krishna through this person, then we will have more patience and stability in our relationships. Generally, we can serve in different ways. We can serve through someone. We can serve with someone. We can serve serve someone directly. And we can serve in spite of someone. Sometimes some people are obstacle. These are all different ways in which we may have to interact while serving. You serve with someone means both of us are partners. You take some responsibility, I take some responsibility, we'll work together. Serve through someone means that person is a representative of Krishna and we serve Krishna through them. Serve someone means that person is coming to Krishna and we serve them by giving them instructions, by guiding them. Sometimes some people oppose us and we have to serve Krishna in spite of them. So instead of changing our devotion, we can change our expectation. The understanding is that whenever something unpalatable is happening in our spiritual life, it has a purpose. That purpose we may not be able to immediately perceive. But if in the long run it helps us to develop higher qualities, then that is valuable. And R is renunciation. Renunciation means that sometimes in our life, we may have to give up everything for Krishna. There are two broad ways in which we can serve Krishna. One is we serve Krishna with everything that we have. And the other is we give up everything for serving Krishna. Both are valid and valuable ways of serving Krishna. There are two broad modes of surrender. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna to surrender to me. Sarvadharman pratyajya mamekam sharanam raja. Now, Arjuna, normally if you think of surrender, who is the person whose image comes in our mind? We need to surrender. Draupadi, yes, thank you. And Draupadi, she surrenders by raising her hands in helplessness. Krishna, help me. But when we consider, Krishna tells Arjuna, surrender to me. And Arjuna says, yes, Karishye Vachanam Tava, I will surrender to you. But does Arjuna raise his hands in dependence? No. What does Arjuna do? He raises his bow in readiness to fight. So there can be different ways in which you surrender. So one, Arjuna is surrendering with everything he has. Using all his military expertise, his archery skill to surrender to Krishna. And in the case of Draupadi, she has to surrender everything to Krishna. She has to give up everything for the service of Krishna. So sometimes when the spiritual life appears to be like poison, that may be so normally we surrender with what we have. But sometimes we need to surrender what we have. The difference is surrender with what we have means, okay, I have wealth, I have family, I have talents, I have intelligence. I use it all to surrender to Krishna. But sometimes I have to give it up and just surrender to Krishna. And Draupadi's example is very sobering because sometimes actually the very road to Krishna may become the roadblock to Krishna. What do I mean this? The road to Krishna may become the roadblock to Krishna. The Draupadi's husbands were devotees. And she, as a faithful wife, would serve Krishna and do dharma with her husbands. But a particular point came in her life when her husbands could no longer help her. So she would normally serve with her husbands under their guidance. But now, when they couldn't help her, what could she do? She called out to them, but they were helpless circumstantial. They couldn't help. So then she had to surrender to Krishna herself. So sometimes for us, normally we could say Draupadi's husbands are our family members, but they are also devotees. So sometimes the association of devotees is the place where we normally the association of devotees is the place where we get the inspiration to serve Krishna. But sometimes it may happen that in that association we may get no inspiration. In this association we may be misunderstood, we may be criticized, we may be left alone. For Prabhupada, it was like that. In the early days,
Nobody was ready to support him. Absolutely. Although his godbrothers had followers, disciples, had money, had contacts. But nobody was ready to support him. And Prabhupada had to do it all alone. He had to surrender to Krishna, giving up everything. When he went to America, when he stepped on Jaladuta, it was probably one of the most courageous steps that anyone has taken. And just stepping into a ship, you say, what is the courageous thing about that? But what it meant, he was leaving the only country that he had known throughout his life. He was leaving it in old age. He was leaving it without money. He was leaving it without any contacts, without any institutional support. He had nothing. So Prabhupada surrendered everything for Krishna. Surrendered everything. So that means that now when we are practicing bhakti, renunciation just doesn't mean we have to give up wealth or we have to give up our position. Sometimes renunciation may mean that we may even have to practice bhakti alone. This doesn't mean that we should assume that all devotees are misunderstanding me and I am right and they are wrong. No, we have to be, of course, honest, humble to check whether we might ourselves be wrong in something. But if circumstantially it happens that we have to do it alone, then we should be willing to do it alone. So sometimes Krishna wants just our heart. So the nature of bhakti is that sometimes that which is the channel for our bhakti can become the competitor for our bhakti. Channel for our bhakti means that we serve with someone, we serve under someone, we serve with some inspiration. But sometimes it may happen that things change and things, the relationships change, people change, dynamics change, and we're not able to serve. Then what we need to do is our relationship with Krishna is our responsibility. Draupadi did not say that, oh, my husbands can't help me, what is the use of practicing dharma? Practicing dharma is my responsibility. It is not anyone else's responsibility. Practice. So I will practice with my husband. If I can't practice with my husband, I will practice alone. So similarly, sometimes renunciation means that which is very dear for us, we need to give it up for serving Krishna. And that may be something material. Sometimes it may be even something spiritual. The association of devotees, even the institution that is there for serving Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur wrote a famous essay where he said that sometimes the institution can become like putana. Putana is meant to nourish Krishna's bhakti. Sorry, putana came as a nurse and putana came with the intention of nourishing Krishna. That's what everyone thought. But then there was poison in her breast. So the mother is considered to be the embodiment of love. And Putana took on the garb of a mother, a nurse, and then she tried to kill Krishna. So similarly, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says that sometimes the institution that is meant to nourish devotion may end up poisoning devotion. So if things become too institutionalized and we get sidetracked, then we have to understand that the institution is not devotion. Devotion is meant to be furthered by the institution. So we need to persevere in our bhakti. Of course, these are extreme situations, but I'm just talking the principle here that our bhakti is something which is our responsibility. We have to make sure that we keep moving forwards in our devotion. The gopis had to give up everything for Krishna. They had to give up their family members. They had to give up everything for Krishna. So renunciation is also an essential part of devotion. And ultimately, the greatest renunciation is the renunciation of our expectation of how we should be practicing devotion. That is the biggest renunciation. Sometimes we have a certain expectation like, this is how, this should happen, this should happen, this should happen, this should happen. And when things don't happen that way, say, why is this happening? Why am I here? You know, see, our expectations, so renunciation of expectations is actually the greatest renunciation. Why? Because sometimes our expectations can help us to move forwards. Say for example, if you're going to do a program, then we have expectation. This should happen like this. Prasadam should be cooked like this. People can, crowd control can be like this. Expectations are good. They help us to plan. So I am here. The reality is here and expectations are here. So the expectations can help me to shape the reality in a proper way. That here by a word expectation, I'm using a plan. I expect that things should move this way. But sometimes the reality is such that the expectations are sent for a toss. Things just completely change in life. So suppose somebody has practiced for a long time to show their boating skills. And they are in a boat and they got oars and they are moving their arms elegantly and showing how nicely I can boat. And then suddenly a huge wave comes. And the boat is knocked upside down. The oars are thrown out of their arms. And they are now in the water, almost drowning. Now if they keep moving their arms as if they are moving the oars, they'll sink. Now you have to start paddling. Now you have to start swimming and get to safety. So our expectations are good to have if they help us to shape reality positively. But if reality itself has changed, then, and if we keep fighting, why is this like this? Why is this like this? At that time, our expectations are simply coming in the way of the reality. So, when the so most of the time when problems come in our life, the problem is bad enough. But what makes the problem worse is that our expectation is frustrated. And a lot of our mental energy goes off. Why is it like this? This is not meant to be how it is. Why did this happen like this? Why did this happen like that? So when the expectation is frustrated, a lot of our mental energy goes in resenting the frustration of the expectation. And when the reality has turned in a different way, at that time, we have to deal with the reality. And the expectation will simply come in the way of reality. So renunciation of expectation is the greatest renunciation. From a practical perspective, the renunciation of expectation will bring stabilization in our devotion. Okay, this is not working like this. How can I make this work? How can I serve Krishna now? So yes, when our expectation is frustrated, that's like poison. But if you understand that this is a time for me to depend on Krishna alone without any expectation from Krishna. So Prabhupada had expectations from his godbrothers. They'll help him some way at least. That he said that I've come to America. I'll build a temple. And Prabhupada also got a donor from India who said he will give money. But that time the Indian government was very strict and they would not transfer any money. Foreign exchange they didn't want to lose. So then Prabhupada told his godbrothers, please contact the Indian government and get this money cleared. And they said, we can't do it. We can't do it at all. So then Prabhupada at that time, it's described in the Lilamrita, how he's just walking along the roads in America. There's one single small man. But Prabhupada at that time internally resolved that I'm not going to get any support from India. So then he decided, stop expecting anything from India. Focus all his energy on the people who are coming in America. And Prabhupada is especially glorified because he did it all alone. Not that he didn't want to work with his godbrothers, but when they were not ready to work at all, he did it all alone. So renunciation of expectation can sometimes actually open us to a bigger and better plan of Krishna for us. And that brings us to the last point of the pure acronym which I'm discussing, is that E is enlightenment. Ultimately, what we want is enlightenment, what we want is ecstasy. And spiritual life culminates in that. But when that poison is there, that poison may be what we need so that we can get purified. The purification is something which will lead to enlightenment. And the Bhagavatam in the 11th canto gives the example that when gold is put through fire, at that time, two things happen. The gold, which is the alloys that are contaminating the gold, all the alloys melt away. And the gold becomes purified and cleansed and it shines even better. So similarly for us, when our spiritual life seems to be like poison, it seems to be like a fire that is burning and is scorching us internally. But through it all, our impurities get removed. And we become enlightened in the sense that we understand that Krishna alone is life's purpose. Nothing else matters. Yomam eva asammoodho janati purushottamam sa sarvavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata. Those who understand that I am the supreme person, they with their whole heart surrender to me. So sometimes, even when we are practicing bhakti, we have various motives. This should work out right, I should be respected, I should be famous, this, that. And now these motives are not wrong, as long as they are integrated with the purpose of pure devotion. But sometimes they come in the way of pure devotion. And when that happens, then actually, if we can just put aside our expectation and open ourselves to Krishna, Krishna, what is your plan? How can I serve you? Then we will find that Krishna does have a better plan for us. Krishna can enlighten us about his plan for our life, and Krishna can take us to the supreme enlightenment where we become purely absorbed in him. So I'll conclude with one story from my life. About 10 or 7, 8 years ago, and I was preaching in India, I suddenly got a fracture. Actually, I was in the temple in Juhu and I was chanting and somebody had spilled some water on the floor. I didn't notice it. I slipped and this leg was already weak and it also had osteoporosis. I had polio and osteoporosis. So I fell and almost like the thigh bone femur broke apart. So afterward, the doctor told me that you cannot travel anymore. So then I was in the hospital for almost 2 months and it was completely disorienting. My whole plan, I had the whole year planned. I was traveling in India doing college preaching. The whole year planned, everything just stopped. So once I was giving class on Skype to some devotees in Bangalore. And then I think God Purnima was coming. God Purnima recently passed. So I was speaking on the opulences of Lord Chaitanya. And it was an audio class because the net was not very good. So no video was there. So I was speaking and I just closed my eyes and became absorbed in speaking. And I spoke for almost 15 minutes. And then I opened my eyes and I saw there was no internet connection. So there was nobody here. And look at the phone and I saw there were almost 30 missed calls. Because they had, almost as soon as I closed my eyes, the net went off. And they had been trying to call me. But because I was on this phone, so I had put the phone, I was on this Skype call, so I had put my phone in silent. So initially I was frustrated. 15 minutes I just wasted in speaking. But then later when I was writing my journal, it just struck me at that time that actually, although I was frustrated when I found out that these people, that nobody was hearing, but while I was speaking, I was absorbed. I was in ecstasy. Now, ecstasy is a very high word to use, but ecstasy has different degrees. But I was myself absorbed. I was happy. So that gave me a realization that actually for speaking about Krishna, I don't need an audience. If I'm speaking for my own purification, whether there is audiences there or not, how does it make any difference? So that was the time I started doing online podcasts. At that time, now with internet widespread, many people are doing it. But that's when I started that in a big way. I started question answers. I started Gita Daily. I did the whole Bhakti Shastri course. And I reached out. So earlier I was traveling physically and reaching some people. But through online, I started reaching many, many more people. And then by Krishna's mercy, my health improved a little bit. In 2015, I started traveling abroad. So it's in many ways, traveling abroad is actually easier than traveling in India. But either way, actually at that time, somehow I could have got frustrated. You know, I just wasted 15 minutes. But somehow Krishna gave me that insight that this happened for a purpose. And then that opened a whole new arena for service. So when the poison is there, it's frustrating. Why did this happen? But if we just are open to Krishna, Krishna may reveal some better plan for us, some purpose why that is happening. And that way, we can move forwards. Even when the poison is there, Krishna will reveal that through the poison, nectar is coming soon. And this is the way to the nectar. So we all can in that way persevere and Krishna will guide us beyond the phase of poison to the phase of nectar. I'll summarize. I spoke about how in this particular pastime, Lakshmi Devi is being worshipped by everyone. So in any relationship, there is reciprocation. But what makes a relationship pure or utilitarian is the purpose of reciprocation. If reciprocation is simply for transaction, I do this for you, do this for me, then that is becomes simply a functional relationship. But when the reciprocation is for connection, then the two people come closer to each other. So pure devotion means the reciprocation is not for transaction, but for connection. And for such connection to be established, there may be phases when the connection doesn't seem to be there. But you have to pursue it. Just like when Radharani appeared in the world, but she had not met Krishna. At that time, it almost appeared she was in distress. She is like a deficient child who can't see, can't speak. But then the connection was established in this ecstasy. So when spiritual life appears to be like poison for us, at that time, we can see it in four different ways. So I discussed the acronym PURE. P is what?
Patience.
Yeah, thank you. So there I explained how sometimes we have to go, anything worthwhile requires patience to go through. So if we can persevere, patience doesn't mean just be passive, but we are ready to wait for the results while doing our part. So simply waiting without acting is the mode of ignorance. Simply acting without waiting is the mode of passion. So acting and waiting together, patience and perseverance, Krishna will reveal that he has a bigger, better plan for us. I talked about understanding. Understanding means that Krishna has, that there are many, many aspects to why things happen in a particular way. So if we stay open, then Krishna may give us understanding of why a particular thing is happening. And the understanding that we need in our life is not just that Krishna can reciprocate the way we expect, but Krishna can reciprocate in some other way. We may want that external situation be removed, but Krishna may reciprocate by giving us the internal strength to grow through that external situation. So the person couldn't move the rock, but by pushing, the person became stronger. So when there are difficult people in our life, then we need to see that I want to act not just based on how they are acting with me, but on how I can serve Krishna through the situation. And then we will grow internally in our virtue, in our virtues through such understanding and focusing on serving Krishna. Then R was what?
Renunciation.
So sometimes, normally we serve Krishna with everything that we have. But sometimes we may have to serve Krishna giving up everything. Or we give everything to Krishna, or we give up everything for Krishna. So giving up everything for Krishna, that's what Draupadi had to do. Her husbands, who were closest family members as well as devotees, they couldn't be with her when she had to surrender to Krishna. And she was ready to do it alone. Sometimes we may have to give up things which are very dear to us materially or even spiritually so that we can surrender to Krishna. So the same devotee association of particular devotees who had inspired us earlier, sometimes things may change and those devotees, we may not be able to serve with them. We have to do it alone. So Prabhupada gave up everything when he surrendered to, when he went to America. Literally he gave up everything, leaving everything behind in India. And ultimately, the greatest renunciation is the renunciation of expectation. Prabhupada stopped expecting anything from anyone in India, put all his energy, and Krishna reciprocated through the people who came to help in America. So giving up expectations means, renouncing expectations means that if expectations help us to shape the reality in a positive way, that is good. But if the reality is changed in an unchangeable way, irreversible way, then we have to accept that reality, put our expectation aside and deal with it. We may train to row in a beautiful way, but if we are in the water with no oars and no boat, then we can't keep rowing. We have to negotiate with reality as it is. And when our expectations are frustrated, instead of staying in frustration, we may experience E, that is enlightenment. Sometimes Krishna may reveal what he wants. Why is he doing this to us? Him soon, or it may take some time. So just as gold, when it is put through fire, the other metals melt away and gold shines better. Similarly, we have many motives for why we are serving Krishna, but those motives fall apart, and the pure motive of glorifying Krishna is what shines through. So when I found that I couldn't travel and speak, and I found that day that I had spoken but there was no one hearing because there was no connection, that's how I got the understanding that I could speak without any audience also. And that's how a new avenue for outreach online opened for me. So for all of us, when spiritual life is turning to is giving us poison, if we just stay in a mood of service to Krishna, Krishna will show us the path through nectar even through that poison. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
One of my brothers told me an incident which is in regard to your point of patience. That was your first
point. Yes, it's correct, yeah.
He told me that he was Prabhupada's secretary, and one morning he woke up and he was completely in a lot of ignorance. He didn't want to get up, he didn't want to go to actually in this case it was Mongolati. But he had to go because he was Prabhupada's secretary. So he went down the stairs and he went into Mongolati, and he was very, he was just going through the motions, and Srila Prabhupada noticed him. And so afterwards Srila Prabhupada said, he didn't know that Srila Prabhupada had understood his mood. So afterwards Prabhupada called him into his room and said, even if you were feeling completely disheartened, even if you are feeling completely unenthusiastic, you should still perform your sadhana, even if it's mechanically. And that was just one thing that came to mind when you were making that point, because you were making a similar point.
Beautiful.
You should be patient and carry on. But I also have a question that arose yesterday, and I would like to hear. Sometimes, and this has been presented to me many times, that people say that in Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada is constantly stressing the association of pure devotees, that one must associate with a pure devotee. So sometimes people will comment that, the comment that I heard recently was that there are no pure devotees in ISKCON, and that
Prabhupada in his books often stresses that we should associate pure devotees, but then people say that there are no pure devotees in ISKCON. So what to do? Well, I can say that this answer in three parts. First is that when Prabhupada says associate with pure devotees, Prabhupada's books are eternal. They contain the eternal message. Also, it is presented according to a particular audience. So, in a sense, Prabhupada is telling us that he is associating the spiritual master with a pure devotee, and we should associate with him. So, Prabhupada is urging us to read his books, to associate with him through his books. And in that sense, Prabhupada is always available to us. Apart from that, Even if we, for argument's sake, accept that there are no pure devotees in ISKCON, how do we know that? Now, is it by saying that, okay, some others who claim to be pure devotees, we later found that they were not pure. So therefore, we say even these are, whoever is there now is not pure. Okay, if we accept that argument, then can we say for sure that if we go to some other movement, there are pure devotees there? There are. The nature of Kali Yuga is that even in organizations where there are people who are born in traditional Brahmana kind of families, they also had issues. Just in the Madhva Sampradaya, the Shri Sampradaya. Madhva Sampradaya, actually, they give sannyas to people only at the very early age, 10, 12, they give sannyas. And they do it after all considering astrology. That is, this person suitable for taking the renounced order or not. And even in spite of that, sometimes people fall, even in their tradition. So, if we think that I will wait till I find a pure devotee to take association, then actually we are not seeking pure association, we are staying in pure illusion. Because there's no guarantee that we will get pure association. So we have to make do with what we have. So what the way that instruction can be applied now is that wherever we have association that we know is more advanced than ours, we take that association. Or wherever there's good association available, we take that. How can we look in anyone's heart and say that whether they're pure or not? We can't. But what we can see is that there are, at least I can say that, I know there are many devotees who are more advanced than me. There are many devotees who are more dedicated than me, more learned than me. They have much more devotion for Prabhupada and for Krishna than what I have. So, with their association, getting inspiration from them, I can take steps forward. So, if they are at this point and I am here, by their association, I can move at least till where they are. And if they are practicing sincerely, then from where they are, if by the time I get there, they will also have moved ahead. It's not that they will be stagnating. So, in general, if we take the association of devotees who are more advanced than us, that can help us to advance. Do we necessarily need a pure devotee alone to make advancement? Well, pure devotee can inspire us, but there's no guarantee. Now, we have in our own tradition the example of Advaita Acharya. His son became a Mayavadi. Advaita Acharya is Vishnu himself. But and his son got so much of his association. But he didn't become a devotee in the sense of Prabhupada's own children. They were pious people. They were worship Vishnu, worship Krishna, but not exactly in the kind of, they didn't become sadhakas like Prabhupada's followers became. So there is no guarantee that even by the association of pure devotees we will make spiritual advancement. And there is also the possibility that by taking association of whoever advanced devotees we have, even with that we can make spiritual advancement. And one more point is that I was talking with Alcoholics Anonymous. I was at Denver and I was talking with a devotee who's working with Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was speaking to them, and these people, when they're alcoholics and they have to give it up, now, when the urge hits them, they need somebody who can understand them. So they often have what is called an accountability partner. An accountability partner means when you get the urge, if you fall, you have a relapse, you go and tell that person. When you get the urge to relapse, talk with them. And they generally say that a sober person cannot be a good accountability partner. Because the sober person cannot understand only. They've never had the kind of craving that they have gone through. So they usually feel a good accountability partner is an ex-alcoholic. A person who was alcoholic and who has given it up. So similarly for us, if we had pure devotees, their association would be so lofty, we would worship them. But it won't inspire us practically. We need devotees who can relate with us where we are and can help us take steps forward from there. Once I asked a very senior devotee, like when I write, you know, writing is, I spend a lot of time and effort and thought in writing. But then, I don't know if I publish an article in the magazine, BTG or in some newspaper or on the website. It's not often that people comment and appreciate the article. So, I don't even know if anyone is reading it or not, whether people are appreciating or not. So it's like you're giving a... So, writing is like giving a class, but there is an opaque curtain between you and the audience. So, you don't know whether there are 100 people and they're appreciating, or there are 10 people and they're sleeping, or there's no one there also. So, then I had asked a senior devotee, a very advanced devotee in a moment, you know, how do I judge the success of writing? So, he told me, Krishna is glorified. That is the success. Well, that's a good answer, but that didn't answer my question. Then I talked with other devotees and they said, you can actually seek feedback, have some feedback polls. When you're traveling, meet people and ask them what they like, what they don't like. So from that, I understood the principle, but that was of no practical help for me. So, in general, in my travels, especially in America, where our movement started and where we have many senior, many Prabhupada disciples there, and also many of our current leaders, the GBCs and others, they are from America. So what I find is that what America is lacking is middle-level devotees. There are sannyasis and gurus who are respected and worshipped. But sannyasis and gurus, they cannot give practical day-to-day guidance. They are too advanced or they are too busy. So we need devotees who can be like mentors or friends or counselors for us. And in India, that is there. And that's why, of course, it's an oversimplification. It's not only one cause. But that association is very much needed. And that association is what practically guides and practically inspires us. So every place has its advantages and disadvantages. In the Western world, we may get the association of senior devotees very easily. In India, if a sannyasi guru comes, there will be hundreds of devotees who want to meet. In America, there are not so many devotees, so we can get to meet and talk also. But then that practical guidance is missing. That connection with somebody who's just a little above us and they can guide us and mentor us, that is not there. So, and I have seen some devotees who left ISKCON and went to some other movement because they felt, oh, there's a pure devotee over there. Well, okay. But even that, assuming that person is a pure devotee, that person is not also going to be on the planet forever. That person is also not going to be on the planet forever. So when they depart, then what next after that? Then are you going to be able to assume that their disciples or their successors are pure devotees? You may feel the same judgmental attitude which we have over here, we may have there. And then we may say that, okay, that's not a pure devotee. Where will we go then? Will we look for some other movement? So actually, rather than looking for a pure devotee, we need to look inwards for a pure intention. If I have a pure intention to serve Krishna, to grow towards Krishna, Krishna will provide me whatever guidance I need. And Dhruva Maharaj went out into the forest. He didn't even have a pure intention actually. He wanted his own kingdom. Wanted and bigger than his father's. But he went with such earnestness to search for Vishnu that Narad Muni came to him and guided him. Similarly, if rather than blaming, oh, there is no pure devotee in ISKCON, we focus on ourselves, you know. Can I cultivate a purer desire for Krishna? Can I cultivate a stronger desire for Krishna? If I do that, Krishna will provide me what I need. So it's not that we generally, you know, in the mode of ignorance, we sometimes say is just helpless and apathetic and useless. No, mode of ignorance is also very intelligent. In the mode of ignorance, we use all our intelligence to blame our situation. All our intelligence to blame our situation. So we are expert at exempting ourselves of all any culpability. Now because of this, that's why it's not happening. In English, there is a saying that success has many fathers and failure is always an orphan. When you are doing a community project, some group of people are working together and successful. Oh, I was a part of the team. Actually, I did the whole thing, you know. Others are just hanging along. But when it's failure, you know, that person did wrong. So yes, it is rather than blaming the association that is available in the movement, we can focus more on trying to ourselves seek Krishna more strongly, and Krishna will provide us what we need. So thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki. Itai Gaur Premanande.